I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, broadcasting live from the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios here in Flora, Mississippi. Appreciate you joining me today. Also joining me next hour will be Stone Clanton with Americans for Prosperity. They are fresh off actually being in the battle. They were over in Georgia knocking on doors and making phone calls in what appears to be the failed campaign of Herschel Walker. So we're going to talk a little bit about what they saw on the ground. Maybe Stone can explain to us how a state that seems so similar to Mississippi, I've spent a lot of time in Georgia, spent 2 years at the University of Georgia, and I guess this is the Atlanta effect, but the state of Georgia has elected essentially a socialist, a pretty bad senator, for the second time in a row. So we'll find out from Stone Clanton exactly what has happened to the formerly great state of Georgia. We'll talk to him next hour. Quote of the day today. There's an article out by Martin Armstrong that his opening paragraph I thought was kind of interesting. He said, I really do have to wonder if my dog is smarter than most Americans who seem to have just lost their minds. My dog makes connections, anticipates what I will do, and studies my habits to predict and respond. I never knew a dog was really smart. She has learned numerous words, and I have had to even spell certain words, for she will respond if she hears the word. Dogs are indeed far more intelligent than I ever expected. Various studies show a dog is typically as intelligent as a 2-year-old human. I can point in the sky at an airplane, and she looks up. Not even a chimpanzee does that, or apparently most Americans. If you point to evidence, they will not look. Yes, I would say the dog, more loyal, more brave, more courageous, more friendly, more well-adjusted, and more intelligent than the vast majority of American citizens. I don't know why it took him so long to figure that out, and dogs are some of the best people out there, for sure. So, anyway, news today. I'm going to get to a blast on the medical system. We got stories from around the world, including here in the United States, that really just point to something that certainly is a theme running through this show for 6 years now. And that is that we have a truly pathetic, disgusting failure of a medical system in this country. We're not alone. I've got some international stories, too, of decisions that are being made by the medical community for citizens of Western, air quotes here in the studio, democracies. We love to puff our chest out in the West. We got all the shiny stuff. We've got all the iPhones. We've got all the streaming services. We've got all the big, beautiful skyscrapers. When it comes to particularly the medical system in these countries, it is just a misery machine across the world and certainly here in the United States as well. Brittany Griner was released and swapped for an arms dealer, apparently. The right is up in arms about this because Brittany Griner is a leftist. Still not convinced she's not a dude. That is one of these stranger stories out there, that there are these pictures of Brittany Griner. It looks just like her playing basketball without a shirt. And it certainly looks like a very tall dude playing basketball with some of the same tattoos, but I don't know. Photoshop out there, maybe I'm getting duped by something. But the right is incensed by this just because she's on the left. But so many things I find interesting about this story. I found it interesting from the very beginning of it that this thing became an international incident, that she was arrested for possessing drugs. Here in the United States, the land of the free, we have locked up millions of people for exactly the same thing that Brittany Griner did in Russia. I disagree with Russia locking her up for it. I also disagree with the United States for locking up millions of our own citizens. I'm going to talk about the people that are upset about this. One guy's been left behind, but I would be pissed off if I was incarcerated here in the United States on U.S. drug charges. Joe Biden has been a drug warrior for all of those of you out there who are enthusiastic about the war on drugs. You law and order types, Joe Biden's been a huge drug warrior his whole life. Of course, not for his own son. He sees that as just a troubled young man who needs help. But for everybody else, Joe Biden has been happy to put people into a cage and throw away the key, calling them animals. So we do exactly the same thing here millions and millions and millions of times, yet this one arrest in Russia was some kind of an international incident. This is American foreign policy, where we judge others completely differently than we would judge ourselves. We apparently swapped Brittany Griner for an arms dealer. And I guess my question is, why did we even imprison an arms dealer in the first place? The story said it took nearly 10 years for the U.S. to apprehend Victor Bout and close to three more years to convict him for terrorism and arms trafficking. Allegedly, thousands of civilians in multiple African countries were injured and killed by weapons supplied by Bout. Is this a fair trade for Griner? This story asks. Am I missing something? Is the United States not the largest arms dealer on planet Earth? Has the United States not provided weapons into African countries that have injured and killed thousands of civilians across Africa? As of right now, we are running a huge arms operation into Ukraine, and countries around the world throughout Europe and even the Middle East are seeing these weapons pop up in the black market. The Ukrainians are taking some of these weapons and selling them for tens of thousands of dollars for some of these rocket launchers. So once again, the United States, known to be, I mean, Donald Trump bragged about being a huge arms salesman. I don't know if anybody remembers his visual presentation when he sat down with those loving Saudi Arabians who were committing genocide in Yemen, and we were showing all the fancy new weapons we were going to send to Saudi Arabia. He had big cardboard cutouts showing all the great weapons we were sending to our friends. Our friends, those loving Saudi Arabians, as well as other countries in the Middle East. I believe we just announced another $3.4 billion arms deal to somebody. The Biden administration just bragged about I think it might have been Qatar or United Arab Emirates. So it's interesting to me that we are worried about Brittany Griner being locked up when we lock up millions of our own citizens. We actually have people that we cherish in our society who wear badges, who will pull somebody over, and if they find a bag of a dried plant, they will kidnap that person and put them into a cage here in the United States. So I've never understood why Brittany Griner's arrest was anything outside of the ordinary. It's taking place. If you're really quiet right now, you can hear somebody going to jail right now for possessing a plant that the oligarchs in this country have said is no good. And then we dare to lock up arms dealers, even though we are the largest arms dealer on planet Earth. This arms dealer, before his just-announced release, he was serving a 25-year sentence in federal prison after being convicted in the Southern District of New York for conspiring to kill Americans and conspiring to provide material support to terrorists. Are we not the same country that funded and paid radical jihadists in Syria to try to topple the Assad regime, and we destroyed an entire country, a formerly fairly civilized, high quality of life country in Syria, and we took it down to the studs as we unleashed holy hell on them using so-called, air quotes here in the studio, moderate rebels that the CIA was paying directly. Also in this story, it's got it all. A Marine has been left behind. He's being held on charges of spying. I'll be honest with you, I just assume he probably was a spy. But I really have absolutely no idea. The Russian government is just another bad government, another bad organization out there. There's a possibility they swept something up, but a lot of Americans come and go from Russia unmolested. And this guy finds himself tried for espionage, and the United States is well known to spy on everybody around the planet, and God knows we've been belligerent to Russia to think that we have not been sending spies over to Russia for at least the last 30 years since the former Soviet Union collapsed is absolutely naive. The U.S. spies on everybody, including our own citizens. Of course, this is the same for all other bad organizations called governments. Israel spies on the United States, I think, more than anybody else on the planet, from what I understand. So there's a good chance that this guy actually is a spy, but I don't know. Maybe he is unjustly held. But the story is just top to bottom full of just all kinds of hypocrisies and head scratchers, as far as I'm concerned. Of course, this is only to be done, and to anybody who is a spy serving the U.S. empire that finds themselves incarcerated around the world, I say to you, like I say to anybody else who serves this system, they don't care about you. They will use you up, and they will spit you out, and they will leave you dangling wherever you are. The best thing you can do is not serve the U.S. empire. It's the same in every country, but the U.S. Is particularly bad at those kinds of things. So, interesting story across the board. Just seems rife with all kinds of hypocrisy and American double standards as far as I can see it. Be right back. Well, you can say what you want to about this show, but I guarantee you, my take on the Brittany Griner story is different than you're going to hear anywhere else on conservative talk show radio. I have several different opposing views to mainstream narratives, and we're about to take on one of my favorite targets, which is the medical establishment. I titled this in my notes, in my show notes here, "Our Disgusting Medical System and the Rent Seekers Who Run It." That's a teaser there for you. Because there is a litany of stories. I've spent a long time on this radio show trying to help people. I am the Harriet Tubman of trying to get people to escape the medical system. It's the U.S. medical system is particularly abhorrent, but it is the Western medical system, which is captured by corporate interest. It's not a medical system. It's not a healthcare system. It's a disease management system. They are rent seekers, waiting for you to get sick so they can profit from your misery. And these stories, you know, if it shouldn't take a whole lot these days for the vast majority of people, but as Martin Armstrong told us in the first segment, most people aren't as smart as a dog. You can point to something and they just refuse to look. But if you're reliant on the medical system for your health and your happiness, good luck with that. Here's some stories from across the Western world, and starting right here in the United States. This is all you need to know about the medical community in the United States. I always need to preface this. There are some great doctors, there are some great nurses out there, but they are far outnumbered by the rent seekers who capitalize on American and Western misery. They do not care about you. and they will let you die if you defy them and their big pharma masters. Duke University. This is an Alex Berenson story. The title is, Duke University surgeons are refusing a 14-year-old girl a kidney transplant because she has not received the COVID shot. At 14, Yulia Hicks has already had more than her share of bad luck. Brought from Ukraine to the United States in December of 2018, she was given up by her first two adoptive families before Chrissy and Lee Hicks adopted her in 2021. She suffers from senior Loken syndrome, a genetic condition that is destroying her kidneys and eyes and will soon force her to have a kidney transplant. Now Yulia is facing another crisis, this one seemingly caused by her own physicians. Doctors at Duke University, where Yulia has been awaiting a kidney transplant, have told her parents they will not give her a new kidney unless she is vaccinated against COVID, even though Yulia has already had and recovered from COVID. To pressure Chrissy and Lee into giving Yulia a COVID shot, the physicians have overestimated the efficacy of the jabs. On a November 29th phone call that Yulia's parents recorded, Dr. Dan Chang, a pediatric infectious disease specialist, claimed that the shots, quote, prevent severe disease and death. Dr. Chang's statement is inaccurate. Data from Australia, for example, shows that more than 90% of COVID deaths occur in vaccinated people. Dr. Chang also told Yulia's parents that the COVID jabs would help Yulia even though she had already had COVID. Quote, the natural immunity is not as good as if you've had natural immunity plus vaccination, he said. In fact, a paper published in the New England Journal of Medicine in July, this is the New England Journal of Medicine, one of their Bibles in July, that examined COVID infections in more than 2 million people in Qatar cast doubt on the effectiveness of so-called hybrid immunity against the Omicron variant. On the call, Dr. Chang and Dr. Eileen Shai Chambers, a pediatric kidney specialist at Duke, acknowledged that their hospital had seen no deaths or severe illness in unvaccinated patients following kidney transplants, but they said they had heard of deaths at other transplant centers. Dr. Chang also pointed to, quote, hospitalization costs. If Yulia developed a COVID-related fever after receiving a transplant as a reason to require vaccination. Dr. Chambers and Duke was not forcing Yulia to receive a COVID shot, only recommending it. She then added, quote, if you don't follow these things, Yulia can't be a transplant candidate here. This is Duke University, one of the top medical schools here in the United States, is willing to let a 14-year-old girl die if she does not receive this shot. And this is after everything that we know about this shot. They will still let her die. In New Zealand, another Western-style democracy with a medical system with all the bright, shiny, big hospitals paid for by the misery of their patients, they have now taken a child away from their parents because the parents wanted unvaccinated blood used for their, I believe it was a 2-year-old, 3-year-old child that was going to have to undergo some surgery. They have now, by the letter of New Zealand law, they have now taken that child away from the parents for its own health and safety. The medical mafia in full effect in New Zealand. And that is why they have their closest neighbor down there in Australia is going through this. Australia's peak actuarial body has asked the government to urgently investigate the country's, quote, incredibly high, unquote, 13% excess death rate in 2022. An analysis of Australian Bureau of Statistics data by the Actuaries Institute showed that an additional 15,400 people died in the first 8 months of the year in the country. Actuaries said that that number includes around one-third of those having no link to COVID. 13% was, quote, an incredibly high number for mortality, and it was not clear what was driving the increase, said Karen Cutter, spokeswoman for the Institute's COVID-19 Mortality Working Group. Quote, mortality doesn't normally vary by more than 1 to 2%, so 13% is way higher than normal levels. I'm not aware of anything. This is what this actuarial said. Quote, I'm not aware of anything comparable in the recent past, but I haven't gone back and looked historically. They talk about the flu season of 2017 being really bad, and the mortality there was 1% higher than normal. So it's well outside the range of normal, she said. This came after Australia's latest mortality data released in November showed that there had been 128,797 deaths from January 1st to August 31st, which was 17% higher than the historical average. Golly gee willikers, what could possibly be causing all of these increased deaths in Australia? And yet New Zealand is taking a child away from her parents, and Duke University here in the United States is going to let a 14-year-old die. You can actually contribute to Yulia's fund. The parents are going to have to start spending a whole lot of money to move this child because they're going to stick to their guns. This adopted child, not even a birth child of them. We got parents here. We've got parents that are offering their children up. It hadn't been a whole lot. Luckily, it's true. It's only about 3% of parents have offered their children up to this experiment. But we've got these loving people who have taken this Ukrainian refugee into their home, adopted her, and now they're attempting to do what's best for her at great personal expense to herself. Again, her name is Yulia. And I believe she's got a GoFundMe, which I will also be contributing to. Got to support parents like that. They also talked about the fact that this is one of the happiest children that they've ever met, this girl who's faced so many severe health problems. Duke University willing to let her die. You need to run from this medical system. I've got a story. There's apparently a great resignation of healthcare professionals here in the United States. To that I say, great. That's exactly what needs to happen. I'll come back and explain that to you when we get back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I'm doing one of my favorite things, which is attacking the medical system in this country and in much of the Western world. We see what's happened. We've seen news stories that other Western countries have been captured by the same corporate interests that are intent upon you getting as sick as possible. Well, they want to keep you alive. They got to harvest you for a while. As long as you're alive and you got some good insurance, oh, they got plenty of things they can do for you. But Duke University willing to allow a 14-year-old immigrant from Ukraine, she might be better off back in war-torn Ukraine than at Duke University in the United States. They're willing to let this child die without the kidney transplant she needs because she will not accept the experimental gene therapy that they are pushing across the board with our medical system. There is it's a give, send, go. And this is the beautiful thing. I need to sometimes backtrack a little bit and say, hey, you know, people can get together. This is really the libertarian way, is that people can come together spontaneously. No need for armed IRS agents to go out and hold everybody up because the government has got such great plans for your money to help people. People will just come together. They've apparently raised about $51,000 for this girl's care, since she is going to have to go out of the state of North Carolina, run away from Duke University and the ghouls running that place to get her kidney transplant. And so there is a give, send, go out there. It's called Kidney for Yulia, Y-U-L-I-A. And they've raised about $50,000 so far. This family, there's a picture of the family there. It looks to me like they've got 9 kids. So I don't know if they are one of these families that has reached out and adopted a lot of children. A lot of them look like it's probably their children. And then even with 8 children, they still found a way to adopt this poor Ukrainian girl with this genetic problem, and now they're fighting to try to keep her alive and keep her out of the clutches of the many Mingalas that infest the U.S. Medical system. So apparently there's been a lot of quitting going on in the medical system. Of course, a lot of it was forced because these same maniacs that are running healthcare that people put their trust in, those of you out there who are taking no actions for yourself whatsoever, you eat a bunch of crap food, and then you just go see a doctor every time a new symptom pops up so they can give you another pill or another procedure. Are you not tired of being, do you understand the people? They are just harvesting your wallet is essentially all they are doing. But a lot of people quit these systems. You know, they forced these shots on employees. But I'm going to read this story, and I got to tell you, my sympathy for people who are pleading, overworking in the medical system, my sympathy is very, very small. And I'm sure there is a handful everywhere of doctors and nurses who have not been down with everything that's taken place over the last 33 months. And they actually do want to help people and know that if they leave, they are leaving their patients in a worse state. But the medical system itself, the hospital system itself in this country is such an abject, total, complete failure that I think a great resignation from medical is exactly what we need. Maybe if medical care was harder to get, people might actually take some responsibility for their own health for a change. The nationwide shortage of healthcare professionals, the so-called, quote, great resignation of providers, is impacting patient care in ways large and small. A new Health Day Harris poll shows 1 in 4 Americans, 25%, have noticed or personally experienced the impact of staffing shortages in healthcare, second only to staff shortages in the retail sector, at 35%. Further, more than 2 in 3, 68% of people who needed health care during the past 6 months experienced delays or challenges in getting the care they need. More than half, 57%, blamed staffing shortages for the lack of care, and experts told Health Day Now that these folks aren't wrong. Nurses, doctors, and other healthcare workers are burned out after 3 years of the pandemic, and some are choosing to leave the profession, the experts say. Quote, we were the front line. That's what Kelly Morgan said. She's a labor and delivery nurse at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston and chair of the Massachusetts Nursing Association. Quote, we were the people that were fighting this pandemic, and we were exposed every day. The triggers that come along with that are the constant stress and mental fatigue, physical fatigue, in essence like PTSD from that environment. As a result, morale has suffered and people are walking away, Morgan told Health Day Now. Quote, in many hospitals, people feel like you're throwing us to the wolves and you're not helping us and providing us the necessary resources we need, the personal protective equipment, that sort of stuff, Morgan said. And it still hasn't changed 3 years in. Our nursing turnover is huge. They're like, I don't want to do this anymore, Morgan continued. I don't want to do bedside nursing anymore. I'm leaving the bedside and I'm going to work in an ambulatory clinic, or I'm going to completely leave nursing as a profession at all because this is not what it was like to be a nurse before. Well, Morgan, you are part of a completely failed model of healthcare. You have opted, the entire system has opted for disease management and completely failed the people of the United States while enriching the industry itself. And Americans have decided that all they had to do was just suffer endlessly every single day just to keep the money flowing to this group. During COVID, the doctors and nurses on the front lines could have, here might have been another approach that maybe would have saved you some of this trauma and PTSD. You could have advised people that young people should not freak out about a disease that killed people with an average age of around 80. If you had not fear-mongered to an entire population of people, most who were at almost zero risk, particularly those young adults and children, you would have taken a whole lot of work off yourselves because people would have just stayed home, had some chicken noodle soup, and moved on with their lives. But instead, you decided to hype the hysteria around this thing, driving everybody with a sniffle into the loving arms of a hospital who dutifully collected, I believe, $39,000 for every single case of COVID. You harvested people for all of that fat cash, and now you dare to complain that it overworked you. You could have told people during this entire time that just proper vitamin D levels, go out and get 20 minutes of sun exposure a day, or supplement with a $5 a month vitamin D3 supplement, and that would have offered everybody a great deal of peace of mind and proven scientific protection from COVID. You decided to ignore that. You allowed the medical system to demonize hydroxychloroquine and particularly ivermectin, one of the most necessary medicines on planet Earth, recognized by everybody prior to 2020 as an essential medication. You decided to ignore that, demonize that, and just drive people in fear of their lives for a 99% survivable disease into the doors of the hospitals. When you got them into the hospitals, you put them on things like ventilators and remdesivir, which caused further suffering and I'm sure taxed your workload even more. And so what happened with the medical establishment, with the medical community, is they fear-mongered everybody to flock into hospitals, freaking out that this was some kind of a deadly Ebola-type disease. When for the vast, vast, vast majority of people, simple, common steps you could have taken at home, you could have told people to get their weight in check. You didn't mention one empowering thing to a single American citizen, instead telling them it's just a matter of time before you die from this disease if you do not follow all of our mandates. This is why you're so tired. I got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I am, Mike. How are you today, sir?
Good. What's going on?
That nurse, that's not the reason she's tired. She's tired because she had to work double shifts because the other nurses on her shifts were doing TikTok videos and dance routines.
Yeah, that didn't engender a whole lot of sympathy from people, for sure.
You know, when you got half of them, you know, you got a few that are sick, and then you got, I mean, everybody wants to be a star. So let me go do a video while the rest of y'all tend to the patient.
Well, they knew, I knew, and I'm no doctor. I tell everybody every single week, I'm not a doctor, not a scientist, not a virologist, not a nothing. But they knew by, let's say, at least May of 2020, that this was really a scary disease, much like the flu is every year, for the elderly and the infirmed. And they took that and extrapolated it out to terrorize young, healthy people are still wearing masks today, running in fear of this 99% survivable disease. They fear-mongered to everybody. They drove them into the hospitals where they collected massive fees for a positive COVID test, which we know the tests aren't even good. And now they complain about being overworked. My sympathy is small. I'll put it that way.
COVID and the COVID response and all of this is the biggest scam since climate change. You know, we've been dealing with the climate, you know, global warming,
right,
climate change for 40 years now.
Well, they needed something to tell you is going to kill you tomorrow. The idea of killing us all in 50 or 100 years just was not dialing up the fear like they really wanted. So they had to roll something out to convince young, healthy people that any day you could drop dead, which was just never, ever, ever the case. I cannot imagine if they had been honest about this, we would barely have even noticed this thing, much like the pandemic of 1958 all the way through 1969, where people went about their lives, and I'm sure nurses and doctors weren't quitting out of frustration and tiredness because we just allowed this disease to go. We told people what was going on, but we didn't fear-monger to them. They terrorized 330 million Americans freaked them out about everything, and now they're whining about the fact that they're overworked. I mean, I'm telling you, oh my gosh, this chaps me.
It's the biggest scam, and then you read stories like you just read earlier about the little girl at Duke who needs a kidney transplant, and the assholes that are running the health system won't give her one. A Ukrainian girl? Wait a minute. How'd she get into the country if she didn't have a vaccine?
She came in 2018. That's how she made it in under the gun.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see that part. But still, you're just like, really?
That's our medical system. This is our medical system. Their protocols across the board are terrible. I can't wait. I hope I live long enough to where they go, oh, my God, chemotherapy. We did what for cancer? We poisoned the entire body?
You know what doctors and nurses are right now? They're the same as those police officers on that video that I sent you and that you talked about the other day. They're just going along to get along, man.
Oh, yeah.
They
yep.
don't give a damn about nobody but themselves, and they don't, the Hippocratic Oath. There ain't a come on, man.
Yeah, no.
you're telling me you're not in the business of saving lives. You're not.
Look,
you're not in the business of saving lives if you won't give a little girl a kidney transplant because she hadn't had a phony shot.
Right.
Could have killed her.
It's unbelievable. And this, Duke University, one of the most prestigious things. I mean, I'm just telling you, if people have not caught a clue over the last 3 years and decided that they are not going to be at the whims of this medical system by now, then God help them, because you've got a long, miserable road ahead of you.
We're in sad, sad shape. And you and I both have agreed a long time ago, the medical community is not in the business of healing. They're in the business of treating.
Yes,
and
they want.
They keep passing you steroids and all kinds of medications to keep you alive. They're going to do it. They don't care if you get. They don't want you to get fixed. They don't want you to be cured. They only want you to keep coming back to them every month, every year, and getting shots and getting vaccines and the pharmaceuticals and the. Hospitals have had record profits for the last 2 years.
Yep.
And it's all because of this scam.
On the backs of terrorizing 330 million Americans, when they really needed to speak to a group of seniors, hey, there's a bad bug going around. We need to be a little extra careful. For everybody under 65, under 70 years old, go about your business, live your life, get yourself into shape, keep your vitamin D levels up. If you feel sick, stay at home. That's all they needed to do. Instead, they decided to terrorize an entire nation full of people. It is just absolutely disgusting, and I have no sympathy for these people on the back end of this thing.
None whatsoever.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate the call. All right. Going to take a quick break. I'll be right back.
At first, I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right. When we come back, we're going to have Stone Clinton on for Americans for Prosperity, and I'm going to get down off of this one particular topic, as this was just about all I could take, the medical community whining about being overworked when they overworked themselves by terrorizing 330 million Americans. There should not be a young, healthy adult in this country that even paid attention to COVID. Shouldn't have altered their lives one single iota. The statistics show that. There's not a child out there that should have missed a day of school, that should have missed a prom, a football game, and the vast majority of parents of kids who are in these schools should have all attended all of their. We should have lived a completely normal life. I'll give them a couple of months to say, what are we dealing with here? But by the time we got a couple of months into it, we knew exactly what this was. This was a virus that was attacking elderly people. And, of course, even the medical community threw everybody on ventilators and remdesivir and killed a bunch of those people, too, that probably didn't need to die. But the terrorizing of 330 million Americans, freaking everybody out that when they got a sniffle or a sore throat, they immediately went to an emergency room, were quarantined, got tests. And the doctors and the hospitals collected $39,000 on each one of these cases that came back to be, I've got no sympathy for this stuff. Look, if you're dealing with health conditions, I do a segment for an hour every single Wednesday. I hope it's somewhat empowering to tell people you can take your health in your own hands. But if you need medical care, and it definitely happens, you need to be looking for people in integrative health or in functional health. They'll be labeled as functional medicine. Now, Mississippi, and I've talked to Stone Clanton about this before, we don't allow naturopaths in this state. The medical mafia in Mississippi is alive and well, and they will not let people, practitioners, into the state of Mississippi that would treat you with natural remedies designed to keep you healthy. They've got their monopoly on medical care in this state, but they do allow integrative health and functional health. You may have to drive a little bit, may even be out of network, but I tell you what, if you use somebody like that, you may actually get your health back. You won't have as many doctor's visits, so it won't end up costing you more money. There's all kinds of things you can do. But I'll tell you what, I did a podcast probably back in 2012 called Escape the Medical System, and I stand by it 10 years later. Absolutely stand by it. We'll be right back.
Right into this world, all alone, God takes your soul.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday from 10 to 11 o'clock, or the Freedom and Prosperity Hour, where we had somebody in from Americans for Prosperity, and today we've got Stone Clanton in. Stone, thanks for coming to join me today.
I appreciate it.
So, you guys, I guess we'll just go ahead and get on into it. You guys spent, how long were y'all over in Georgia?
Well, AFP Mississippi, our team went over there for two different, what we call, deployments. We were over there a few months ago. It was about a couple months ago when we were over in the Atlanta suburbs.
Was that before the first election?
That was before the first, the regular general election. And then right before the runoff, we were in Rome for about a week.
Yeah.
Or a little under a week. And that was more of a get out to vote for that area, because that was a solid area for Herschel.
Yeah. Well, so what do we think happened?
Yeah, so look, I called David Cassis, who is AFP Georgia's Director of Grassroots Operations, and he pretty much led AFP Action's efforts in that race. I was like, look, David, I said, what happened? What are we telling people? And we're acknowledging the fact that there was a general question of quality in the candidate,
for Herschel.
Yeah, that we were backing, but that it does say something when there's a president. Or let me back that up. Raphael Warnock is an incumbent, so they're all automatically going to be harder to beat.
Yeah.
Number two,
which is bizarre in a country where everybody does not like politicians. We judge, you know, it's so funny to me that nobody, the political class in this country, is not popular, but what's the incumbency re-election? It's, like 93%.
Yeah, and a lot of that does have to do with name recognition.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy did win, and it was very tight. It was close. It was only, they lost it by 2 points, I believe. And that says a lot for a president who's sitting at 41% right now.
Yeah.
Approval rating. So it's, I think it was a lot of factors. It was honestly, get out to vote. The Democrat Party is incredible when it comes to getting the vote out.
They do hit the streets. There's no doubt about that.
It's not even more so getting the vote out. I'd say that's more of a Republican thing, getting the vote out. They're get the ballots out.
Yeah.
And they're very good at what a lot of people like to call ballot harvesting.
Right.
Let's just be upfront and honest
about
it. Now,
is that illegal in Georgia, or do they make that legal? I'm confused.
I think the word ballot harvesting is just kind of a loose term that people use. It could be actually taking ballots, sort of sample ballot to nursing homes or wherever, or it could be people getting buses and taking people that can't get there themselves to the polls, whether it be a person in a wheelchair that can't drive, or a nursing home that, you know, whatever it is.
Now, they have done that. That's not a COVID thing.
No, they've always done that, and they've always been good at that, and I'll give them that.
Yeah.
But if if conservatives or whatever you want to call people want to do that, they and if it's legal, then they probably need to look into doing that. And then the other team just they done it better. And there's the and again, I'm going to acknowledge the fact that there was a questioning quality of the candidate, but the fact of the matter was we saw Raphael Warnock is an anti-policy
champion.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And we had
he's
to engage
bad.
In that race. He's bad.
He's not even like kind of a moderate, you know, from a purple state type thing.
I believe he votes about 98% of the time with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's. I mean, I think he's – didn't he I mean, I don't think he hid socialism when he ran the first time around. I mean
– No, not at all. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you might know it. I believe he spent some time in New York at a church, I think, and that had a lot to do with the Communist Party up there. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's a big red flag for me. And look, I think just this the overall election was supposed to be a red wave. It wasn't. We talked about that back a few weeks ago, right after the general
Unbelievable.
Happened. And this was just a nail in the coffin. I was looking back over something. I was watching a debate between Ben Shapiro and Cenk Uygur. For those who don't know, of course, Ben Shapiro is editor-in-chief of the Daily Wire. Cenk Uygur is the founder and host of the Young Turks, which is basically the progressive version of the Daily Wire. Two very well-respected groups, and they were debating. It was either right after the time that Donald Trump was elected president or right before, and they quoted then Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, who I'm not necessarily a fan of. I don't see him as a true policy champion. But there was a quote that he said, and I looked it up and was reading after it, but he said that after the Republicans took control of the House, he said the Republican Party, and we can just put in conservatives or libertarians or whatever, and insert whatever, needs to stop being a party of opposition and start being a party of proposition.
Yeah.
And I still don't think that ever happened. But and I think and it's a lot of what you always say. And it's just like Mississippi, you always say lacks creativity,
yes,
and innovation. It's
interest.
Like that everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think that we are going to have to swallow this pill, take it as a lesson, and there needs to be considerable thought about where we're headed as far as elections go in the future.
Well, I am not the election fraud expert. You know, there's obviously a lot of people that are seeing things in Arizona. There are strange vote things where certain certain people in the Republican Party might get through, but somehow another candidate might lag by 200,000 Republican votes. I mean, there's a lot to hang your hat on when it comes to wholesale mail-in ballots and all that stuff. I do not argue with these people. I do say eventually you're going to have to overturn an election to really convince the vast majority of American people that there's fraud here. But, I mean, I really feel like we are heading into a time where it is going – I think we're about to completely lose faith in elections.
We already have, I think, as far as the – I'm not saying I have, but I'm just saying – that the majority of Americans, and it's both sides. People don't realize that because I believe Hillary Clinton come out a few weeks ago with a video saying that Republicans or conservative, whatever, are trying to steal election 2024.
Yeah.
So it's both sides. It is. It's the left and the right. And the fact of the matter is that people so far the left and so far the right, you eventually circle around and you meet each other.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. But it there's no fate. What happened to the days where in Florida clearly done it right, and Mississippi always does it right, I think. We always decide our elections on election night.
Yeah.
But it seems like these crazy swing states always take weeks to sometimes decide.
Yeah.
Because didn't they just decide what's her name, the governor in, is it Katie something? Yes.
Carrie Lake?
Yeah, or Carrie the Lake.
Yeah.
No. Oh, yeah. Or maybe it
That's
was Carrie
Arizona.
Lake. Yeah, Arizona. It took them like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
What?
No, it's absolutely is a mess, and there certainly is, there's a lot of inept people in elections, and elections are, they're difficult. I don't like big federal control of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, elections is one of those things that is fairly decentralized.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these
it is.
States run these elections. And so it feels like, you know, there just may be some states that are going to be locks for whoever, you know, is in charge of the machine there. I don't know if you root that corruption out, but it's going to be very interesting to see. Maybe it should be encouraging to me. I'm for a national divorce at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with just different areas, all detaching from the federal government, and we're now in quadrants or regions or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. We go our own way because, you know, it's bad enough. It's a bitter pill for anybody to swallow that, you know, Dianne Feinstein from California has made rules that you and I have to live by in Mississippi. Yeah. I mean, I believe that this government is unworkable in the fact that 330 million Americans with different cultures, different geographies, different demographics are at the whim. I shouldn't care what a senator from Montana does for my life. And I think that's, you know, that's where we are, and that does not work. But when you also believe, not only do you disagree with what a Nancy Pelosi from California does that affects your life in Mississippi, but if you also believe that she wasn't legitimately elected, I mean, this is going to turn into be quite a bit of chaos.
Yeah, I don't know. As far as that piece goes, I really don't know. But, I mean, going back to what you said about caring what a senator in Montana does, it's really sad because I'm a 24-year-old or fixed to be 24-year-old from Mississippi is having to go to Georgia and Ohio,
right,
and into Pennsylvania,
right,
to have to campaign for a candidate that I see as either better or sometimes the lesser of two evils. And sometimes I would honestly get a little aggravated with people at the door saying, well, where they would pick up on my dialect, and they say, well, you know, where are you from, da 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 da, and I'd look at them and say, sadly, I'm here because this race is going
to
affect my life,
yeah,
in a totally different area of the country. And it's really sad. As far as the faith in election goes, I still do have faith in the majority of the elections because, like you said, they're fairly decentralized from the federal government. And Georgia, I think, as far as this race goes, again, I think that the opposite party was really good at getting the ballots out or at least getting people to the ballots. I guess that's a better way of putting it. The way I was saying it was a little bit more negative. Instead of just getting the vote out and saying, hey, hope you get out and vote, they would take people to these polls that could not get out themselves. But I think Georgia's fairly safe. I mean, Brian Kemp beat the socks off of his opponent,
yeah,
a few weeks ago. So, you know, I just don't see there being a huge election fraud situation in Georgia. I don't see that being a situation in Mississippi. I don't see that being a situation in Florida and many other states. I'm not saying there's election fraud in every election,
right?
When there's more than three people involved, but yeah, I don't know. I think there's going to be a huge paradigm shift in that, and there has to be faith restored in our government. I don't know.
I can't see it.
Yeah, I, you know, you can only hope, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, the one thing that always kind of cracks me up, and I think Tucker Carlson will say this line, and it's not just him. I'm not picking on him, but they all say, mm-hmm. is that, you know, people will say, well, you know, I would hope, you know, they'll talk about election fraud or something hanky that went on somewhere, and they would say, it's in the interest of all Americans to have free and fair elections. No, it's not. People want to win. And people who win, if your candidate, and I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, if it came out in 2024 that Donald Trump was returned to office, but there was all kinds of hanky things in the elections, there ain't going to be some uprising by the Republican Party and Trump supporters to go, well, we don't feel good about this. This doesn't really feel right. They'll say, well, see, we got you back.
Yeah,
we had to do it because the winner accepts the winning. I mean, people are only interested in honest elections if they think that's going to benefit their side.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think we're trapped in a very weird thing.
We're such in a hyper-partisan environment now that you're right. I mean, you're right. I mean, the winner's never going to say, now, I think I won. And we hope I did. We're going to let these.
But
they're
going
to say
over.
No, we won, and they're just trying to make up excuses.
Right?
Yeah, that's the way it's all. And honestly, it isn't just elections; it's other things too.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like you always hear about. Honestly, you always hear conservatives say, "Oh, well, who gives a crap what this person from Hollywood, what their opinion is?" But as soon as a Rob Schneider or James Woods comes out and says something conservative, they're like, oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a load of bull crap. And it's it's just partisanship. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And it's kind of disgusting, but
it's
the world. It is.
Yeah, it is.
But
just
it's
bad.
It's the world we live in.
Well, I mean, you know, if I thought anybody was benefiting from it, I mean, you know, I know it's easy for Republicans to look at where they elect these Democrat administrations, whether it's on a state level or these cities that are just really decaying and have got huge crime problems and bad education and high taxes. And you just think to yourself, what are you Democrats voting for? You are just, I mean, you are hurting yourselves. But I believe Republicans do a lot of the same things to themselves, not to the degree that some of these Democrats do. But the mystifying part to me, and it's really why I guess I'm a libertarian. I like the Libertarian Party right now, but they might change again. They used to be horrible. But to me, I just had to get off of that. I was like, I cannot vocally support anything that I think is actively hurting me and the prospects for my children's future. Even if it's better than the other side, I'm just not going to actively do something that's bad. And I think our two-party system right now is just, I don't understand anybody who's really firmly entrenched on either side of this thing.
I don't know. It is very discouraging, especially when you see the rate that the country's going in, and I mean, with a president with 41%, we talked about, you know, Raphael Warnock was the incumbent, and there was the lack of quality in candidate, but it's still I'm dumbfounded sometimes by what people will vote for, just because, and it could even go back to the election in 2020. I think that President Trump done a lot of good things for the country, and I believe that if COVID hadn't happened, I believe that election outcome would have been a lot different. But I mean, we always blame the president in charge.
Well, it wasn't because COVID happened; it because the Trump administration heralded in this entire sweeping change to our entire society COVID.
That's also true. I think there was a lot of factors, but the fact of the matter is that the person in charge is usually always blamed, and I don't know. It's a weird world we live in.
I'll tell you one thing: what I don't get is the people who are backing Trump for 2024 have got a real strange philosophy about it. If this election fraud is what they say, he's got no chance, because they talk about how they wouldn't let him win again in 2020. Of course, that there's always a reason why they did let him win in 2016. It's bizarre stuff, but Donald Trump's record since he has headed up the Republican Party is not good. He is 1-3 right now in elections as head of the Republican Party, and for some reason people believe he's the way to go in 2024. I think there's a good chance the Republicans might go 1-4 for 2024.
Like I said, I think there needs to be a major new direction that conservatives and the liberty movement needs to head in.
Oh, they are. It's called Kanye and Nick Fuentes.
Yeah, I don't think that's the correct direction.
They could go Rand Paul, Thomas Massey.
I would love
going
that.
Kanye.
I would love it. I mean, those guys are great. But I think we need to be happy warriors. I heard somebody tell me that. That was the first time I'd ever heard that a few weeks ago. I was at an event, and somebody said, if people want to start winning elections, if we want to start winning elections again, we've got to be happy warriors.
Yeah.
And we got to show actual change. We cannot be the party of opposition. And that's the thing I like about AFP is we do oppose bad things, but we usually have solutions to it too, just like with the healthcare thing. I mean, we are against Medicaid expansion, but there are also other ways that we can create affordable quality health care for people, that it is accessible to so many other people through the free market. Capitalism and the free market has lifted more people out of poverty than any other.
The problem with you guys, not with your organization, it's not a problem with anything where there are true solutions. They're not really that hard. But, man, to educate the American people,
it's tough.
It is hard. They want sound bites. They want brash tweets. You know, they just, people are not really interested in sitting down and thinking.
Yeah.
It seems like we have that.
Well, I guess, like you said, you could blame TikTok a lot.
All these things. Yeah, absolutely.
I love TikTok. That creates some funny videos on there, but I don't think there's any doubt that our attention span in the past, I would love to see some sort of data. I'm sure there's something out there that you can see the attention span from the 1950s all the way down, or from maybe the early 1900s, because there was that huge industrial revolution, and then, you know, in the 40s and 50s, that's when TV started getting in, and I would love to see it just dwindle down, see a ski slope almost.
So we are essentially a nation of squirrel. Yeah. So anyway, all right, we got to take a break. We're talking to Stone Clanton, Americans Prosperity.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much, and my scars remind me that the past is real.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, here in the Mack Hiker Flowood Studios, talking to Stone Clanton. So I guess we are settled then. We're a 51-49 Senate now, right? Is everything settled? Is there all the elections called across the country?
Yeah, it's called, and I guess what we were really hoping for was just that true gridlock. I mean, you would have had the vice president would have been technically that last vote on the Democrat side, but I mean, I love a good gridlock.
Oh, absolutely.
Because at least they're not trying to ruin your lives anymore. But
are we expecting anything that you guys can tell from the Republicans controlling the House now? They've talked about, looks like they may hold some feet to the fire to repeal the vaccine mandate for military. That's kind of one of the big things. Do you know, because I think the most important thing Republicans can do, well, there's obviously a couple things. They need to get us the hell out of Ukraine. They need to stop all that nonsense and force the U.S. To force Ukraine to the negotiation table, which a lot of Republicans want this war, too. Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz wants this war. Marco Rubio wants this war. Lindsey Graham wants this war. So, you know, I don't have a whole lot of faith in Republicans changing them. But they need to stop this IRS thing. Can they defund this 87,000 IRS agents to go out and scour through our
Venmo
accounts?
Maybe if you can pull some of those swing votes in the Senate,
But doesn't the House control the purse strings? I mean, can't they just not fund something?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they'll vote against everything the Senate votes against, and I mean, they're going to be anti-Senate, but at the same time, we're still, as far as the actual split between the Senate and the House, yeah, I think we'll be fine in the House as far as that type of stuff goes. But in the Senate, we still have to worry about appointees and everything as far as justices and stuff go. Other than that, I really couldn't tell you anything as far as what we're going to be seeing out of that, because the House is going to pass something, the Senate is most likely going to reject it unless you can pull some of those seats. And then the Senate's going to pass something, or unless if they pull those few swing Democrats, and then the House is going to reject it, and it's going to go back and forth. So, I mean, there's good things that can come out of it. The only bad thing, I think, is the appointee process. Yeah. Now, of course, I know Senator Rand Paul was coming out about if they were to take back the Senate, he was going to look into more of Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, that's
and all
a shame.
That stuff
that
went
fun.
On. It would have been very fun to watch.
Well, the House should be able to take this up.
They should be. Yeah. They should be. I would love to see some. I don't know what committees Thomas Massie sits on, but I'm anxious to see what he'll be able to do under a Republican-controlled House. Not that they're always going to back him, but it's still interesting to see when.
Yeah, that's a smart guy.
Yeah, love him.
Well, I will say that. We're going to take a break, but I will say at least the I think the libertarians are in the clear now. You know, this whole Georgia thing, libertarians faded a lot of heat for this. You forced a runoff because you stole 2% of the vote. That is such a red herring. That is such a Republican talking point for putting up not great candidates and not doing a great job of however, you know, electioneering they need to. Because, number one, there's a couple of reasons. I talk about this a lot on the show. Number one, Republicans have this belief that every vote for the Libertarian Party was going to be a Republican vote, and that's not true. There's a lot of anti-war leftist, anti-drug war leftist that vote for libertarians. Yeah. And then there's a whole lot of libertarians, myself included. If I don't vote for the libertarian candidate, I'm not voting.
Yeah.
It's not like I went, oh, good, I've got a libertarian. Usually I would vote for, no, I'm not going to get off my couch to go vote for a Roger Wicker. So if you see my vote for a Libertarian senator from the state of Mississippi, it was somebody who inspired me enough to at least go get my vote counted and do that. But I wasn't. Roger Wicker was never going to get my vote. So this idea that every time the Libertarian is within the margin of a victory for a Democrat, the idea that this is Libertarian spoilers. I'm not saying they don't take any votes from Republicans, but the idea that every single vote, that's how they look at it. They go, oh, look at this. The Democrat won 51, you know, or 49 to 46, and the Libertarian got 2.5%. This would have, you know, that's the Libertarian spoiled it. No, those votes were never going to be Republican votes. You know, that drives me insane.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, we have to get off that mindset. I mean, it's sort of like even with the Dems, say, with a Green Party all the time.
Right.
Jill Stein, when she was running, I don't even know if they had a Green Party candidate this past election, but that's what it was always about. And I remember Hillary Clinton attacking Jill Stein years ago, and that she's just trying to keep her from winning. So it's part of it's another version of partisanship, and the fact of the matter was that the Libertarian candidate in that Georgia Senate race was a very good candidate.
Yeah,
and he pulled votes.
Well, and he wasn't involved in this one. Republicans had their clear shot at the Democrats, and they apparently whiffed.
Yeah,
so we'll see. All right, we got to take a quick break. Talking to Stone Clinton, Americans for Prosperity. We'll see what they're up to around the state when we come back.
From all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. So we're wrapping up this year. You guys are about to kind of wind down your activities, I guess, take a little break, catch a breath, and then start in January. That's when Americans for Prosperity, your work begins.
Yep, we AFP had our Highly Jolly Policy Party this past Saturday. We had about 40 people, or 40 to 45 people there at the office. Had a really good time catching people up on what we're doing, and had some Amerigos there, so that's always good. And
I've had to work so much recently. I've missed the last several things that you guys had. I work all the time, but I was on such a good streak of getting free AFP meals. Y'all always have some of the best food.
I think this was one of our best meals that we've ever had. It was a lasagna, tiramisu, and some other stuff. So it was Amerigos is always good. But anyway, we caught people up on what we're going to be doing. And of course, legislative session starts in January. We are taking a little time off towards the end of the year just to recoup from everything from traveling, as well as because Starla Caden and our new GD from up in North Mississippi, Nathan Moore, are headed up to DC for the Stand Together, which is our larger philanthropic organization. It's just the umbrella term for what AFP is in our network and everything. They're going up there for the end of the year, a holiday celebration, have some Christmas dishes and all that kind of stuff, and I believe break out into some sessions. I opted not to go. I was kind of tired of traveling, I want to stay around with family, but I hope they have a good time. Safe travels up there. I think they're going to head out this Sunday and stay up for a few days, but we'll take some time off after that to recoup. But in the legislative session, we're going to be tackling a number of different things. I know we're going to be looking at three different bills regarding education. One of them specifically with dual enrollment and workforce development, free market workforce development, essentially.
What is dual enrollment?
Essentially where high school kids can take college courses.
Yeah.
And this would, and I think this one is specifically going to be looking at vocational schools.
Yeah.
So a lot of the schools around here have VoTech programs anyway. If they don't, they can go to their I don't know the exact language of the bill, but essentially they come out certified by the time they finish high school. I don't know if they would have an associate's degree with that, because a lot of the community colleges, no matter what courses you take, even if it's vocational, you end up taking some core classes like your Englishes and maths, so you can have the associate's degree.
Right.
So I'm not sure what that's going to look like, but even if a kid comes out certified as a welder, they can still go to medical school if they wanted to, but they'll just have that extra certification.
Right.
There's some other educational bills that I don't know the specifics to. We're looking at some home-based business stuff. Where people can operate businesses out of their homes. Now, if it's going to be, we're not talking about somebody having a strip club in a suburb or nothing,
yeah, right.
or having a big mechanic shop in a cul-de-sac, because, you know, that would probably violate local ordinances or sometimes even homeowners association ordinances. But we're talking about your cottage food stuff, your embroidery shops and stuff like that, that isn't going to create a nuisance or anything. That, I mean, a lot of the most famous businesses in the world start out of homes, Amazon, Google,
right,
all that type of stuff. So we want to be that innovative state that allows people to do that. Of course, we're looking at healthcare again, certificate of need. In past years, for 5 to 7 times, we've tried to eliminate certificate of need as a whole. And we're going to take a step back from that and look at it in pieces for right now. As you know, Mississippi is probably not going to try anything that another state hasn't tried before. And they have to have proof. We don't ever want to be first doing anything. However, I think that we're looking at something, especially with a lot of talk about mental health and addiction over the past few years. I know that End It For Good's really done a good job with that, not just here in Mississippi, but across the country now, and as well as other groups like AFP and other ones. We're looking at mental health and addiction certificate of need center. So any sort of rehab center, mental health hospital, anything like that, we want people to be able to have those things. And we're even looking at this from a criminal justice perspective. How many people are sitting in your county jails right now that shouldn't really be sitting there because Absolutely. They haven't done anything violent or anything? They, you know, whatever it is, but what it is they have mental health problems.
Yeah.
Same thing with the homeless population on the streets. The most of them, a lot of them do have drug addictions, but it's on top of mental health disorders.
Right.
And so we need to look at this a different way, and hopefully we can get something passed this coming up year. And then finally, agricultural sandboxes that we talk about all the time. We're looking at that. I believe Starla and Kate are going to a lunch in a day to discuss the facets of that and what it's going to look like. Essentially, Mississippi is a rural agricultural state, and we want us to be number one in that as far as tech goes, because agritech is one of the most fast-changing technologies that is happening in the country right now. We want to be the leading example of that, and hopefully we can do that.
Yeah. Are you expecting – I know it seems like sessions in election years go one of two
yeah.
ways. Either there's a lot of bold stuff, people jockeying
yep.
to do things, or it's status quo. They don't want to upset the apple cart. They want to keep everything as it is because it got them elected in the first place, so they're going to play it safe. Any ideas of what this legislature is going to be?
No, I have no idea at all. I mean –
Are you doing anything? Are we expecting any further changes to tax code, or are we set on this course?
If I had to guess, I would say no right now.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they won't try to do something like that. I'm sure somebody will, and we would be in support of that, of going ahead and fully eliminating the state income tax. I just don't see that happening right now. That's just me personally. I see somebody waiting until it does get down to that flat tax and then them reassessing it.
Yeah.
Because it was really in the Senate that we had a hard time passing that anyway. The Speaker of the House did that. That was one of his three core things that he really wanted to look at. It was eliminating the income tax. I'm not saying it won't be tried again, but I think they got as far as they might want to get right now. As far as anything else goes, as far as them playing it safe, that's what I feel like they're going to do, because usually election year sessions are always shorter anyway. I think it's probably going to end at the end of March this year.
When is the election? Is that a November deal?
The general will be.
Yeah.
The general election will be. The primaries will be in August, I believe. I might be talking out of turn right there, but
yeah.
They'll be in August.
What are there any big players that are changing? Is Philip Gunn not running again for either speaker?
He's
or
not
his
running
at all.
Not at all.
He's
not
stepping out.
Yeah, he's stepping out. Well, I guess we're waiting. Everybody's waiting to see whether or not he'll run for a higher office or take a step back from politics for a little while. Because, like I said, the speaker did accomplish the three things he wanted to do, which were changing the state flag, at least attempting and getting a good start at eliminating the income tax, and then thirdly, he wanted a correct bill to essentially overturn Roe v. Wade, and that's what they did, and that come from Mississippi. So he'd done those three things, and I think he's just going to be taking a step back away from politics for a little while.
Yeah.
Unless he does end up deciding to run for something. So we're waiting to see.
Delbert's running for re-election?
To my knowledge, he is.
And is Chris McDaniel challenging him? Do we know that yet?
That, I assume, is uncertain. I know that Senator McDaniel has been going around speaking to different towns and groups. He was actually in Brandon about a month or two ago speaking, and then not far from here, I can't remember what other town he was in recently, but he is going around speaking to a lot of places, and I guess we'll have to wait and see what ends up happening. I know that that's what everybody is insinuating. You got a lot of Facebook groups that are talking about that. So
I think that would be interesting. I think Chris McDaniel is interesting. I think he is. And I'm suspicious of all politicians, but people who are around him that I trust say he's kind of the real deal. I think he would be a marked change from Delbert Hoseman, but yeah. I live in such a Chris McDaniel kind of freedom bubble and just totally underestimate the number of people out there who the name recognition of Delbert Hoseman and his aw shucks advertising just works on, even though he appears to be a Democrat. Pushing for, you know, bigger government within the state of Mississippi and nothing very interesting. I think Chris McDaniel would be a very, very interesting lieutenant governor.
Yeah, like I said, we honestly have no idea what that's going to look like. I mean, it's December of 2022 right now, and the election is next year. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. I mean, there's always, like I said, I think the filing date... And again, I don't know the specifics to this, but it's sometime either at the end of January, beginning of February, I think the filing date is. Maybe after that, but we still got that time to see if anybody's going to jump in the race.
Yeah. Well, some new kind of energy in the state, sir, sure would be welcome. I'd like to see something interesting. I think Chris McDaniel is one of the few that I think actually would be a bit of a change agent, would kind of change the atmosphere, the... I think he might actually move the Overton window a little bit. I know the Republicans Party has been pretty successful at marginalizing him when he ran against Thad Cochran and then really going after him. The establishment doesn't seem to like him very much. I live in this anti-establishment world where he seems very popular. But like I say, Roger Wicker is going to be our senator as long as he wants to be. Cindy Hyde Smith. There's just a whole lot of people who just take these Republicans and just keep voting for him, and they may do the same thing with Delbert Hoseman. So, anyway. All right, one more break, and we'll come back. We're talking to Stone Clanton, and Americans for Prosperity. Stick around.
All over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment here on the Mike Madison Show, Mac Hike of Flowwood Studios with Stone Clanton from Americans for Prosperity. This hour went by very fast today, yes, but I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in the legislature here. You guys have really brought me around to understanding how important the local stuff is, and this is probably why my frustration is. I'd like to see something more exciting going on in the state of Mississippi.
Yeah, and we'll be gearing up, like I said, at the beginning of the year. Session starts January 3rd, I believe. So I'll be there. Star will be there. Kate will be there. Maybe our GD up north can come down, and we're seeing what that'll look like. Like I said, we're kind of anxious to see if it's going to be a slow year where nothing gets done on purpose, or it's going to be one of those years where a lot of bad stuff happens. But we'll be hosting a legislative kickoff, undecided on the date yet, right now, at our office in Richland, and as well as one probably in Oxford and one over at Meridian or somewhere. Just gearing up people to get involved, and grassroots does matter. We're going to be relying on a lot of people to make calls into their legislators' offices when it comes to important bills, because that makes a difference. I know people don't think it does, but it made a difference when it came to the income tax bill. We put calls into the lieutenant governor's office, into the speaker's office, into a few different senators' office, just simply asking, hey, we want the Senate and House to come together to form a reasonable elimination of the income tax without raising other taxes. That's what we're asking for. And we believe it worked. So
at a time that Mississippi was flush and fed cash and all kinds of stimmies and goodies for the state, Do you get a sense of what is that money gone? Are we still in good financial shape? Have they kept powder dry on that?
I have no idea. I haven't really heard a thing about it.
Yeah, I really don't know Mississippi's financial shape. I should know that as much as I'm focused in on the federal stuff.
I think financially we're in a pretty good shape. Of course, there's a lot of federal dollars that we get, but I mean, we have a huge rainy day fund, and I mean, like I said, this isn't just our income tax being quote unquote eliminated or now going to be a flat tax. That isn't just going to happen all of a sudden. It's going to be phased out, and we're going to have to look at budgeting, I assume, in the upcoming year, which is always a good thing, and reanalyzing and seeing where we can efficiently do things. I think that's a major thing. I think even an office like the state auditor's office can always be a help. I will never forget, I was reading an article a few years ago about how efficiently we can do things. At rest stops, you always see Coke machines and stuff. It was in some state out west that removed all the LEDs from their Coke machines, and they saved over $100,000 from their rest stops. So I think it's even stuff like that I wish we could look at just efficiently.
It would be fun to go through a big budget, like a state's budget.
It would be fun.
Just, you know, if you just could be a benevolent dictator for a day.
Line them out. You can only imagine
the amount of money that is just wasted.
Which I will say, if I go up to a rest area and that Coke machine ain't lit up, it's going to look a lot less appealing.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good thing, too, on the health side as well. So there's that. So, all right, tell everybody where they can find you real quick.
Yeah, they can find us at Americans for Prosperity - Mississippi on Facebook, AFP Mississippi on Instagram, and then I believe AFP Mississippi on Twitter. You can contact me at sclanton@afphq.org, or you can call me at 601-309-536 if you feel like you want to get involved in the upcoming session.
All right. Thanks, Stone. Stone Clanton, bye-bye. Americans for Prosperity. I'll see everybody else tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.